The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The prospect of an assembly election in Northern Ireland awaits a date to be set by the Secretary of State. Now, the Assembly and the Executive seem to spend more time not doing politics than doing it. This is Geoffrey Donaldson back in 2018 when Sinn Féin cited the Irish Language Act as one of the chief reasons for pulling the plug on the then Executive.
I think we are moving towards the moment when a decision is going to have to be taken. As a Member of Parliament, I every day now encounter situations in my own constituency where people are losing out as a result of there not being a government in Northern Ireland. And we can't go on like this. And it is wrong, in my opinion, in a democracy that one party, representing maybe 25% of the people, is able to veto the establishment of a government. That is not democracy. But if we cannot get beyond this, reluctantly, someone is going to have to start taking decisions. And in the United Kingdom, that is Westminster. But we cannot go on in a situation. We heard the question about blackmail. Well, it is wrong to blackmail an entire community and say you cannot have a government until we get our way. That is not the way that democracy should function. We need that now. We need Stormont back up and running. We need our own government.
That's what Geoffrey was saying in 2018. That is not what Geoffrey is saying now. Anyway, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, is going to meet the Northern Ireland Secretary of State for the first time since he reneged on a pledge to trigger a fresh Stormont election. And this was supposed to happen pre-Christmas, and it was supposed to happen within hours, according to his own words, of the DUP refusing to go into an executive. Anyway, I am joined on the line by Deirdre Heaney, Professor of Social Policy at the University of Ulster, columnist with the Business Post, and by Conor Murphy, Northern Ireland Finance Minister, Sinn Féin MLA for Newry and Armagh. Conor and Deirdre, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Now, Conor, we'll go to you first. Your leader had a meeting with the Secretary of State. What was gleaned from that meeting?
Well, I was at the meeting and I have to say there was absolutely nothing gleaned other than I suppose we could deduce that the British government don't have a plan. They were very clear over that, particularly towards the end of the 24-week period that we have for forming an executive following an election, where it's very clear the DUP weren't going to respect the outcome of the election that we just had in May. And Chris Heaton-Harris was very clear that if that was not the case, then he would set a date immediately for an election. That's what's required under the legislation. Legislation, by the way, that was brought in at the behest of the DUP a couple of years ago, that an election would be called. And then on Friday, he did inexplicably a U-turn in that position. So we met him yesterday morning, myself and Michelle O'Neill, and we got absolutely no clarity as to what he intends to do or if or when he intends to set a date. And that puts us into even more of a limbo. It was frustrating enough over the last 24 weeks when I was acting in a shadow or in a caretaker capacity, rather, as a finance minister with restrictions on decision-making powers, as were all of the other executive ministers. Now we're out of office, as in from last Thursday night at midnight, and no clarity as to how we can get a way back in to get the executive work. So we clearly had been bending all of our energies to try and get the outcome of the May election respected and an executive up and formed since May, and the DUP has held out against that, and now we're in a situation where the British government have decided not to give us a date for an election, and at a time when the cost of living crisis is biting deep on people and with our health services under enormous pressure, I think that's an intolerable position to leave us all in.
Do you see, though, the parallel, you know, in Geoffrey Donaldson's words back in 2018, and now I suppose he's being shown his own hypocrisy at that time, but still, Sinn Féin was pulling out of the executive because of the Irish Language Act. He's saying we're pulling out or we're not cooperating with the formation of an executive because of the protocol. Sauce for the goose, sauce for the gander.
Well, could I correct you there, Pat? The executive didn't go down in 2017 over an Irish Language Act. It went down because there were only two parties in government at that time, ourselves and the DUP. The DUP were involved in a massive financial scandal around a renewable heat scheme, which was potentially going to cost hundreds of millions of pounds. We, as their partner in government, were totally unaware and in the dark in relation to what they were at in their departments. And I would suggest that no coalition arrangement would have survived such a scandal, including any in the south of the border, would have survived where one government partner was acting in the way they were. We had a deal on the table within a year to the DUP to get the executive back in place, which the leadership accepted, and the party then scuppered. And it was only 2 years later when they came back, when Simon Coveney and Julian Smith intervened, that they came back with the same deal, and the DUP eventually came back into government. So it wasn't brought down over an Irish Language Act. It was brought down over a financial scandal. Martin McGuinness had asked Arlene Foster at that time to step aside while an inquiry would take place into the scandal. She refused to do so, and he was left with no option but to resign his post as Deputy First Minister.
So when you just asked the straight question, I'm sure, to Chris Heaton-Harris about why he didn't live up to his, it was a threat seen by some, a promise seen by others, that he would immediately name the date for an election. What did he say when you asked him, why did you not do what you said you'd do?
Well, he said that he wished to have another round of discussions with the parties to see if anything could be resolved. We reminded him that the issue which was preventing the formation executive, the discussion around the protocol, wouldn't be resolved by the parties in the North. It won't be resolved in the Assembly or around an executive table. Those are matters between the British government and the EU, so there was no dialogue to be had with the parties in relation. There's no agreement to be found at Stormont to form an executive. That agreement is subject to the EU and the British government, and we would hope that there are earnest negotiations at last on the British government's behalf, and that we do get the issues around the protocol resolved and resolved quickly. That is good in terms of our own democratic institutions, but it's also what our businesses and what our community wants to hear is some sort of resolution to some of the problems that there have been around the protocol, and we would encourage the British government to engage genuinely and seriously in those negotiations.
He also said, I mean, realistically, though,
wanted an election. He suggested parties hadn't wanted an election. Of course, we did not want an election up to the point of the Thursday, because that was when the time frame to try and resolve the issues that the DUP had been presenting had run out. And clearly, none of us wanted an election to that point, because we wanted the executive to be formed and the outcome of the May election to be respected. But that point is now passed, and under their own law, they are required to call elections. We encourage them to go ahead and get one called as soon as they can.
Now, you can't see the protocol issues being resolved by the EU and the UK in the time frame. It just doesn't seem possible, and therefore the DUP, unless the miracle happened of rapid action on this front, they are going to stick to their guns. So an election is inevitable, but let's fast forward to that election. You've analysed the seats. Nothing much is going to change. Sinn Féin still likely to be the largest party. The DUP may be hoping that some of the traditional unionist votes might go their way and they could flip the situation and once again get a majority. Might be unlikely. So, you know, what'll happen after that election?
Well, can I say that the DUP tactic of refusing to allow the rest of us to form an executive is ostensibly to leverage some pressure on the British government in terms of what its position might be on the protocol negotiations. British government has been in a state of complete chaos for months, if not years now. So arguably that tactic doesn't work, because they're more interested in their own survival, and they will reach whatever deal they reach with the EU in whatever time frame suits them, and not because of what the DUP are doing in Stormont. So the only people who are suffering as a consequence of the DUP actions are the people that we all collectively represent in the north of Ireland, and they are in the midst of a cost of living crisis and a public service crisis given the impacts of austerity. So if an election result happens, we won't preempt that. We'll fight it with all our energies, and that's what the law requires, as an election to happen within the next 12 weeks.
What then?
Well, what then, if the DUP resolve that they can't do power sharing, then I think a different conversation opens up, because, you know, I mean, we can't go on denying people the right to representation. And if the DUP are resolved that their brand of leadership, political leadership of unionism, can't do power sharing with the rest of us, then I think with the two governments who are the co-guarantors of the Good Friday Agreement, a different conversation has to open up about how we give proper representation to the people of the North.
All right, Conor, thank you very much for that. Conor Murphy, Northern Ireland Finance Minister, Sinn Féin MLA for Newry and Armagh. Listening to our conversation, Deirdre Heenan, Professor of Social Policy at the University of Ulster, columnist for the Business Post. Deirdre, what do you make of Conor's analysis?
Well, I think Conor's right in the sense that what we know very little is the answer. We find ourselves drifting again, rudderless. We have absolutely no idea what the British government intends to do. Will he, won't he call an election? Last Friday, it seemed a definite that Chris Heaton-Harris would call an election. He had been so sure that he had no other choice and that's what he intended to do. Yet by Friday, he didn't really seem to know what had happened. He couldn't explain why he wouldn't do it. He couldn't explain if he was going to do it. He seemed as if someone, we believe that Sunak has said to him, actually, we've taken the temperature here. There'd be absolutely no point in calling an election, which begs the question, well, what happens next? What are we going to do now?
So Deirdre, when you say that we haven't a clue what the British government is going to do, it might be the case that the British government doesn't have a clue what the British government, you know, based on current form.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, we've witnessed the chaos in Westminster, the theatre of the absurd. You have to look to see who the Chancellor is. Just last week, it was interstage right. Sunak, the fifth Brexit Prime Minister. How long is he going to stay? Who knows? Will the EU take him seriously and have serious negotiations? Who knows? But it seems clear to me that on the one hand, people are saying, well, thank goodness Sunak's there. He's at the wheel. He's the serious person in the room. He's pragmatic. It seems that his instinct is to get a negotiated settlement with the EU. But on the other hand, he's still talking about the Brexit opportunities. And I think until he is realistic about what has happened in terms of Brexit, and there are now increasing voices from independent think tanks, serious think tanks, saying Brexit has been a disaster, then I don't see how we can actually resolve the Northern Ireland situation. We have to have grown-up discussions about the impact.
But the grown-up discussion requires the British political establishment to say, we got it wrong on Brexit. It was a catastrophic mistake. We were engineered by the ERG and people like them into a vote where the truth was never told. And even yesterday, I don't know whether you saw Tom Tugendhat talking to the Commons about, you know, the likelihood that the electoral process and Brexit referendum was actually interfered with by foreign powers.
It seems very likely. It seems very likely. And there's increasing evidence to that point. But what we have really witnessed was a crusade whipped up to a holy land that doesn't exist, fighting with our people who are actually our friends. And we can't change geography and we can't change the fact that we live in a global world. But we have to have a moment of truth in terms of Brexit. And then I think we will be able to resolve the issues. Until then, we will be on very shaky foundations. But the reality for people in Northern Ireland is we are now sitting rudderless again, in limbo. Our public services cannot really exist in any other way other than to take over. We have serious strategic issues that we cannot answer. Our caretaker ministers who've been in post as part of the previous mandate have left. So there's no one there to make decisions. Our health service is in crisis already, and we're facing into a very difficult winter. We know about the cost of living crisis. We had information out this week to say we have children. Now, think about this in terms of the reality versus the politics. We have children in Northern Ireland waiting for more than 4 years for medical treatment. For those children, that might be seeing a speech and language therapist. And that means that they are missing key developmental milestones that can never be fixed. That casts a shadow on the rest of their lives. And you just wonder, at what point will the people in Northern Ireland, businesses say, look, we are tired of being collateral damage? Because that's clearly what we are here. We're very bottom of the pecking order. No one seems in any hurry to make decisions. And I think we need a plan. So if the Secretary of State came out today and said, right, we are going to run a second election because the law says we have to and we're not in the mood to change the law. But after that second election, if after 7 days when we've run the hunt, we have no government, then we will close Stormont. We will stop the salaries and we will institute direct rule for a period of at least 4 years because the people here deserve stability. It mightn't be ideal for many people who might constitutionally think they don't want it, but the worst possible outcome is another 3 years of drift where we find ourselves, you know, where people are actually struggling to exist. People are dying unnecessarily. You know, there is a point where a government has to say it is our duty to govern, to make decisions, to concentrate minds. And maybe by that period, the fantasy of Brexit will have somehow been resolved and the DUP won't have their 7 tests for the protocol because those 7 tests simply cannot be met. They are not based in reality. They're based in a view that says we want to pretend that Brexit didn't happen. Well, until, as I said at the start, we faced the reality of what was voted for in the UK, the impact on Northern Ireland, then I can't see how we can have long-term stability here.
Deirdre Heenan, Professor of Social Policy at the University of Ulster, columnist with the Business Post, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.